Here are the numbers now. Humidity high, 90%. Wind north at 7. 75 Kenosha, 74 in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. It is 10 past 8. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Wednesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Well, we are about to continue a very happy midsummer tradition here on the Morning Show, something that we've been doing for a nice long, long time, a conversation about one of the loveliest events of the midsummer, the Secret Garden Walk of the Four Seasons Garden Club. And one of the people at the helm for this event is joining us in the studio, a longtime friend of the studio, of the station, Linda Gtormsen-Guy, a past president of the organization and a member of the steering committee for this event, which is coming up this Saturday, July 12th, 9 to 3, rain or shine, no matter what Mother Nature has to say about it, this event goes on. And it's an opportunity to step into five different, if you will, private gardens that otherwise would not be accessible and visible to the general public. And so it's different people, in a sense, inviting you into their beautifully crafted gardens, and each one having its own sort of unique artistic statement. And we're going to be talking about the gardens that are going to be featured on this weekend's event, and a few other things related to the Four Seasons Garden Club. And Linda Gtormsen-Guy, we welcome you back to the Morning Show.
Well, thank you, Greg. It's always a pleasure to be here. And after that intro, I barely have to say a word.
You've covered it all already. Well, I've covered a couple of basics, but of course there are some really wonderful stories behind some of these different gardens. And of course, it's no small matter to put an event like this together. We'll be talking about that as well. But maybe let's talk for a second first about the Four Seasons Garden Club itself.
Okay.
And a little bit about this organization and what it's about.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, we don't always have an opportunity to get into that. But we've been around since 1963. And, of course, I don't remember 1963. Anyway, the club has been chugging along since then. A lot of changes over the years. A lot of people have come and gone. And, you know, we're still thankful to our founding members who set a good foundation for us. Mm. But the original intent with the garden, they were much more concentrating on floral arrangements.
Mm.
And garden clubs in general, that's still a primary focus. But we have kind of taken a different direction. And we're more involved in and contemporary issues. We're concerned about conservation and ecology, and all of those things play into our thinking a lot more. The majority of us maintain a garden in a sense. Maybe some of us have scaled back now, and you know, a mixed planter or two is you know, on our condo balcony or something right. like that. But we all come from a gardening interest and maybe a little bit of gardening heritage through the family and that sort of thing. So it's people with a concern for maintaining gardens, keeping an interest up in the community, and you know, attractive landscaping and all those things that gardens can do for us, aside from what they do for us personally, internally. You know, they inspire us and they rejuvenate us and that sort of thing, and I don't even need to get into that. But anyway, the garden, the club itself has, this is our primary fundraiser over the year. And we've also initiated a plant sale in early spring, which has been growing in success over the years. But this this is still our number one event, and this event goes to fund causes that we support within Kenosha County and maybe a little bit beyond. Primarily scholarships, and a lot of that is authored through Gateway and their horticulture department. We maintain the Margaret Myers Memorial Garden down at Kemper, and actually that's a little piece of our story this year because we have done some changes and some renovation down there. We're more likely to feature that garden next year's walk when things have filled in a little bit more. But be aware that there's been some work going on down there. Land preservation at Chiwaukee Prairie, we've supported for, well, as long as we've been around. We do Labor Day or Earth Day plantings throughout the community, usually at schools, and involve the students in the activity. There's a library. We support the library system by donating horticulture-related books, and other organizations that we may have issued grants and that sort of thing. The St. Matthews, the Lakefront Elder Garden, was actually featured as a bonus on our tour a couple years ago. We support them. Hawthorne Hollow was our bonus garden last year. And we extended our tour, and they extended our tour into their wonderful grounds. And this year we are also, we have added a Blue Star Memorial what we're working on. It's a program through, actually, it's supported by garden clubs across the United States, memorials to people in the service, people that we've lost, and people that we support today. And there's going to be a new Blue Star Memorial included on the Kemper grounds that's going to be supported by the garden club. So if you hear it mentioned at the garden walk today, and we are, you know, always looking for support from the community there, you might stuff a buck or two in the in the pickle jar that's waiting for your donations.
Right. So it's a long list of good things that the garden club is doing, and by purchasing a ticket for the Secret Garden Walk, people are supporting all of those ventures and more.
Exactly. I mean we say what we take in from the community, we give back to the community. We run on a very, very, very meager budget, and we appreciate the community support all the way down the line.
For those of you just joining us on today's morning show, we have in the studios Linda Gtormson-Guy, a past president of the Four Seasons Garden Club, and a member of the steering committee for this year's Secret Garden Walk coming up this Saturday, the 12th of July, starting at 9 in the morning until 3 in the afternoon. And this is largely a self-guided tour of these private gardens, although there is somebody from the garden club at each of those sites.
There are multiple somebodies right, who are there to answer questions, give you directions to the next garden perhaps, or maybe even identify some plants that the homeowner is still questioning.
Yeah, there you go. Yes, you are experts, that's for sure. Before we talk about the specific gardens that are on this year's garden tour, give our listeners a sense of what is involved in putting together the tour each and every year. I mean, how particular gardens get chosen, how the thing kind of takes shape. I know that sometimes that can be a rather circuitous route in one way or another.
It always is a circuitous route. We take a lot of cue from the gardens that have been displayed in the past, what people like to see, and there are a lot of things to organizing the tour that have developed over time. I mean, we've been doing this for over 20 years now, and you always learn something every year. There's a question, there's a new question that comes up, there's a new suggestion. But year after year after year, our biggest challenge is finding those gardens. And it varies from year to year. We know right now we've got a couple that are on the list for next year, but our job is to find the other three or four, or, you know, and people keep reminding me, well, wasn't, you know, didn't you used to do seven? Well, there have been occasions when it blossomed to seven, where we had gardens that were maybe two or three in a particular street, cul-de-sac, neighborhood. And then, you know, the more the merrier. Hmm. But ordinarily, it's at least five and occasionally six. So, but finding those gardens, we start looking immediately after this year's tour. We'll start looking for gardens for next year, because we want to see those gardens at a time when they're in full bloom, as they are this week. And, you know, we've learned year after year, it doesn't do us a whole lot of good to be checking out gardens in November or, God forbid, February. But it happens. This year, too, it took us a while to get the list together, and we had a number of gardens that we were satisfied with that were, again, show people what they wanted to see, were in logistic convenience, if you will, and all of that comes into play. We don't want people to have to travel from the Racine County line down to the state line in Illinois to find our gardens. You'd rather be in the gardens rather than, you know, in your car getting there.
Right.
So, I mean, that was one of the first things that we learned. Mm. You know,
you want proximity.
Consolidated, exactly. So, but we were all set to go come the end of October, and then things happen. And you cannot control the fact that people get ill over the winter. People have accidents over the winter. And all of a sudden, those heavy-duty gardeners who couldn't wait to get out in spring aren't going to be able to get that garden into shape for a garden walk. So we had to do a little bit of scrambling in spring. And fortunately, there were members who had connections with gardeners who know gardeners who know of a gardener who, you know, and so goes the networking. And that has helped us out on a number of occasions. In fact, there was one occasion where we lost a garden over the summer or over the winter, and I had one of the one of the instructors from Gateway was doing a talk to one of our meetings, and I spoke to her about, you know, do you know? And she started telling me about her garden, and I said, "That's it, sold. You're on the tour, darling." So anyway, it's amazing how it does come together.
One way or another.
And one way or another, exactly. I mean, this year we had a few other hoops to jump through. And like I said to you earlier, when you think you've gotten over, you know, the last issue and this has been solved and that's been solved, and all of a sudden there's one more hoop and it's in flames.
Mm.
So you know, things happen up to the last minute.
Right. I suppose that's almost inevitable when we're talking about an event like this, which is, I mean, in some ways, it's a beautiful, simple idea.
But
when you think about all of the sort of moving parts.
I'm glad it looks that way.
Yeah, but it's a complex thing and bound to be all kinds of things to contend with. But it sounds like ultimately it's shaped up to be another beautiful tour. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Linda Guttormson-Guy, a past president of the Four Seasons Garden Club, a member of the steering committee for this year's Secret Garden Walk, which is coming up this Saturday, July 12th, starting at 9 a.m. and lasting until 3 in the afternoon. And this is an opportunity for you to visit a total of 5 different private residential gardens, if you will, and a special bonus garden that we'll talk about in just a moment. And if you pay a visit to a number of different gardening centers or stores in town, you can purchase your ticket to be on the Secret Garden Walk. And we'll just mention those right now. Stein's here in Kenosha, Suburban Garden Center in Kenosha, Sunnyside Florist and Gifts in Kenosha, a Summer's Garden Florist in Kenosha, Anton's Greenhouse and Garden Center down south in Pleasant Prairie, and finally Westosha Floral out in Paddock Lake. And those are the 6 ticket outlets where you can purchase your ticket. And your ticket is actually the guidebook itself, which has wonderful, well-written summaries of each of these gardens that are part of the tour. And you just show that brochure or booklet, and that is what gives you entrance into each of these gardens.
And it's not necessary to make your purchase ahead of time either. Each and every one of the homes on the tour, the private homes on the tour, the tickets will be for sale there as well. And if you need to know those locations ahead of time, and you probably do if you're going to wait and buy that ticket, that information is all on our website. Mm. You know, we cover that later as well. But the tickets are available now and will be through the day of the tour. And you can always pick one up at the individual gardens.
Very good. You always write a really nice and typically fun essay at the that opens the booklet, if you will. And very much the theme of what you wrote this year is change. And because that is a theme that seems to be important for at least several of these gardens, is that things change, people change, families change, and often gardens are also changing, reflecting those changes and so on, which is probably a really fun thing to think about.
Well, and it's not unusual that we have addressed change. We don't go looking for a theme when we select gardens, but sometimes the theme kind of presents itself to us. And as far as change goes, well, the one constant in gardening is change, ironically. You're driven by the changes in the season, by changes in plant availability, changes in nature. You may have a lovely shady garden. In fact, one of our past members has dealt with that a number of years ago. She was on the tour and displayed her fabulous collection of hostas in her lovely shady garden. And it was within like 5 years that beautiful tree that was shading that garden had to come down.
Mm.
So our dear Margie ended up with a sunny garden. And eventually her sunny garden was on the tour too. So you adapt to change. And sometimes change comes through nature. I think we see more change as we have a couple of gardens here that come through family situations change. You may start with a garden that accommodates young children.
Mm.
You know, there's space for the garden, but there's also space for the swing set and the sandbox and the jungle gym and whatever else comes along with small children. And as the children go, the garden is going to change. And when the jungle gym goes, well, maybe Dad's finally got room for his pudding green. Mm. And how that affects the living. And eventually the kids are grown and gone, and it becomes adult space, and you concentrate on, entertaining and such. But no, wait, you're not done. Because 10 years later, the kids are back, and they bring the grandkids. So maybe putting that sandbox back in is a good idea, it's, I hate to be theatric, but it's the cycle of life, isn't it?
So absolutely.
That's the one, the one thing that we can count on changing.
Right.
Changing interests, changing focus. One and a half of our gardens on the tour this year are people that have developed a love of the Zen gardening. They've been concentrating on conifers and doing things with rocks and that Japanese gardening look. And in that process, they've also developed an awareness of maintaining our pollinators, the bees, the butterflies, the things that keep our gardens going. And there's a lot of awareness to pollinators, which is part of the garden of their next door neighbors. Now, I say five and a half gardens because we do have our standard backyard garden, our secret garden, as we say, on the tour. But the next door neighbors in the front are displaying their front yard, just the front yard. They're still working on the back.
Yeah.
But there they have concentrated on plantings that encourage those pollinators. So that's a whole different approach.
Sure.
Your changes are influenced by the people and the events around you.
Right. And I should think that, probably back in 1963, when the Four Seasons Garden Club was first organized, I think it's fair to say that we were not talking about pollinators and the need to sustain them. I mean, we all knew what pollination was in 1963, but it was not the urgent issue that it is now.
Yeah, unfortunately, the early 60s were the days of DEET, DDT, and, let's get rid of these nasty bugs. And
right.
I think now we have more of an appreciation of not so nasty critters.
They all make a difference. Well, let's talk our way through some of these gardens that are going to be on this year's Secret Garden Walk. And again, the event is coming up this Saturday, the 12th of July, from 9 until 3. And when you have the program guide in your hand, you have a little map which tells you where each of these gardens are, and they are all nicely located and roughly the same side of town. And so it is a relatively convenient matter to just make your way from garden to garden, maybe not walking to each and every garden, but you can certainly get there easily enough. The whole matter of change is certainly a central theme of the first garden you talk about in the booklet, the garden of Diane and Jim Larson, and this seems to be something that in which their garden first put in 1976 has undergone all kinds of dramatic changes over the years as their family has changed.
Exactly. They're kind of the poster child for change this year. But as a matter of fact, I spoke with Diane just recently, and it was I have no problem remembering that particular tour because it was the first one when I joined the garden club. It was as near as we can count the third year that we had a garden walk, but it was the first year that I was involved with the club. So it was that garden and that experience sticks in my mind. Mm. And they are indeed in the same house, and the garden has adapted to changes and family over the years, and it is still just as lovely as it could be.
I know that one of the things mentioned in the summary is that they have made a shift towards native plants. I mean, something that apparently wasn't so much a feature before, and that also is a sign of kind of the changing times and evolving awareness of what makes for a really healthy environment around us.
Exactly. I mean, people have really come to recognize and appreciate we have a lot of wonderful native species. The time that you might spend down at the Chiwaukee Prairie, you can learn how many of those species that grow wild down there is something that you can cultivate in your own garden.
Can and should, probably. Very good. So Diane and Jim Larson with their garden, and the title of their summary is Our Forever Family Focus, and the way in which the garden over the years has been a reflection of their family. I'm very intrigued by the second garden, Kathy and Jim Landgraf, and in this little essay called Midsummer's Dream Walk, they talk, among other things, not only about the beautiful things growing, but a beautiful structure that is part of their garden as well. And it's something that you've obviously seen with your own eyes.
Yeah. A shed you would not think is something, that you want to feature in a garden. But if, and the shed is designed as a playhouse, well, now that's a different story.
Yeah.
You know, we've had playhouses on the tour in the past that have been so very popular with children that are accompanied and parents and grandparents alike love to see that kind of thing. And this is one of those situations where the generations have come and gone, but now, gee, what have we got for the grandkids? And this is these are people who have taken that into consideration too.
Love that. That's a neat idea. And one of the things they also mention in their summary of their garden is we love variety and instant color. And so it sounds like they have tried to make choices with their flowers. So on any given day, any part of the summer, most likely you're going to walk into that garden and be confronted by beautiful color.
The backbone of most gardens are the perennials. But perennials are only going to give you a limited bloom time. So when you start talking about instant color and ongoing color, then our friends the annuals fill in. And we're always grateful for a sprinkling of annuals here and there just to keep the party going.
There you go. Speaking of keeping the party going, Karen and Bill Isaacson title theirs A Garden of Friends. And as you first start reading this, I was jumping to the conclusion that the friends they were talking about were the flowers themselves.
Uh-huh.
They feel like friends or something. But no, they were talking about friends in a much more literal sense, and not so much the sense of friends as in acquaintances, but friends as in the people they have brought in to help with this garden and tend this garden over the years. Tell us more about that.
This is kind of unusual for us. Most of the gardens on our tours are maintained exclusively by the homeowners. This is a little bit different situation. These are homeowners who have maintained a garden for years and years, but as time goes on, they've developed a few other interests too, and maybe they want to spend more time on the golf course, or maybe they want to do a little more traveling. And to have a crew of people that can back you up and keep it going and keep that garden maintained while you pursue, you know, other interest is a different approach. And for them, this is a change that has, you know, freed up their life for other things they can enjoy. And to come back after, you know, after a day out and still have a lovely patio surrounded by well-maintained plantings, is restful for them. And that's the, you know, the environment that they've chosen.
Right.
So
the
kudos
friends
to them.
Yeah, and so and kudos to their friends, as in the people they have brought in, who they've hired
right.
to do a lot of that work.
Obviously, from, you know, the cast of characters here, I mean, they are very grateful
right.
for this opportunity. So
I was also struck by the fact that they mention in their essay that when they built this house back in 1990, they say, we didn't give much thought to the gardens.
Yeah.
That was, from the sounds of it, was, you know, a bit of an afterthought, or at least at that point in time, it was all about, you know, building the house and what's inside the house and so on. And only later did they kind of come to realize what an opportunity they had to create and maintain a beautiful garden. But that's kind of a nice thing to be reminded of as well, that it's not just people who have been avid gardeners from day one, but sometimes this is a passion that develops over time.
Yeah, I mean, you got a fabulous new home, and then you look out the window and you say, whoops, you know. Maybe we ought to pay a little attention to the, you know, start with the curb appeal and then take it from there.
There you go. The next garden is owned and tended by the Ashtons, Ronnie and Roger Ashton. And it sounds like the choices they've made with their garden were mostly about trying to recreate, in their words, a little piece of the past, something sort of peaceful and idyllic in these times that are less and less peaceful and idyllic.
Yeah, this garden has been on the tour previously as well, but they have over time have added a lot of structure to the garden. I mean, there's a screen house, there's a gazebo, there was, you know, a water feature that was added, and all of this was in bits and pieces along the way. It was 12 years that we last saw this garden, so I have not seen it recently, but I do expect to see quite a few changes, and they've adapted. But the homeowner there is very enamored with the Victorian lifestyle.
Mm.
And I worry that the Victorian lifestyle isn't necessarily all pretty white dresses and parasols. I mean, let's think about chamber pots and, you know, a few things like that. But if we can go by what we see in the movies, it's a lovely picture to paint for yourself.
Absolutely.
And this has been her goal over the years.
Fantastic. We mentioned early on the kind of garden and a half thing in terms of somebody's garden and then their next door neighbors opening up their front garden area. And that is kind of the fifth and final garden that is outlined in the booklet. And it sounds like for the primary garden who we will visit, that they have a real interest in Japanese style gardening.
Exactly.
So what does that look like?
It concentrates on shape and design as opposed to floral displays. You may see very, very few colorful flowers in a Zen garden, but you'll see elements of nature that play together. You might see a dry creek bed. You might see rock formations and in that are accompanied by soil and sand. Conifers, small to large, cone-bearing, you know, people just generally call them pine trees.
Yeah.
Right. But conifers are very important because of the structure, the year-round structure.
Hmm.
You know, they're not, you know, not plants that are going to lose their leaves over the winter. You're going to have full seasonal interest in a Zen garden.
Hmm.
I mean, the Zen comes from the fact that it gives you an opportunity to, you know, be of a Zen frame of mind in a garden like this. There are less distractions.
Hmm.
There are, you know, there's solitude. There's just enjoyment of nature in its most simple forms. Oh my gosh, I'm going on here.
But no, it's true though. Yeah.
But it's something that people are gradually discovering, and this is the example that they're setting for us here.
Hmm. And they evidently also care a lot about sustainability and healthy ecosystems, as do their neighbors who have created this garden in the front of their house that is designed to attract and sustain a variety of pollinators.
Right.
And is this kind of a first for the Secret Garden Club to have next door neighbors kind of two for one?
It's not the fact that we have next door neighbors that work together. We've done this a number of times when there are homes that are in very close proximity or right next door to each other. There was one tour that concentrated in Pleasant Prairie where there was like four homes in a row.
Hmm.
It was, you know, one of the rare times we can say that this is virtually a walking tour.
Yeah.
But this is the first time that there have been concentrations on the ecology and the mindset of these two homeowners, that they're so concerned with the pollinators and sustaining gardens that support that that element. But she says something about was it if Stacy and Phil's yard is an enchanted evergreen forest, ours is a whimsical fairy garden. But between the two households, she said, we happily host as many pollinators as we can, and it's great to have neighbors who care for biodiversity as we do.
Yeah.
Well, that, you know, that's such a statement right there.
Absolutely.
And this garden is physically apart from the initial four gardens on the tour. This is down on just off of Lake Michigan.
Hmm.
On Third Avenue. So it's a totally different biosphere,
Hmm.
if
yeah.
you will, bioscape, bio, the being right on the lakefront. They have different soil concerns and such in their area, but they've also got a great view.
Yeah, so. No kidding. Absolutely. So those comprise then the residential gardens, if you will, that are part of this Secret Garden Walk coming up on Saturday. As is often the case, there is a bonus garden, and the bonus garden is, there's nothing private or secret about it, but it is a wonderful opportunity for Kenosians to maybe visit something that they haven't seen in a while. And this is the beautiful garden at Lincoln Park. Tell us a little more about this.
Hmm. The Lincoln Park Sunken Garden and I go way back. I have fond memories of that garden. My grandparents lived about two blocks away.
Hmm.
And when I would spend time with Grandma as a child, we would take walks to the garden. It was always a stop on our way to the farmer's market at Lincoln Park as well. But that garden was a magical place for me. Mm. The six-year-old Linda was just fascinated by the assortment of flowers. They were different from the flowers that Grandma was growing at home. And on a rare occasion, when it was a Saturday, and there was a wedding party being photographed. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. It was fairyland then. So that garden has been maintained in various forms over the year. The basic structure remains from what I remember as a child. The gazebo is still the feature. But the type of plantings have changed. It was at one point, I do remember, and maybe this is just in my fantasy world, that those gardens were primarily roses. The Mr. Lincoln rose filled a number of beds, maybe all the beds, I don't know, in that garden. It may have been just one year for a particular celebration, Lincoln Park, Lincoln Rose, whatever. But it's a beautiful, deep, deep, dark, mysterious red rose that the scented the landscape incredibly. Like I said, this could be dreamland here. But roses were included at one time. Roses take a lot of care. Any gardener will tell you, oh, my God, our rose garden, you know, I couldn't possibly keep up. And they have over the years, in order to maintain, as I spoke before, that splash of color that can be maintained throughout a long season, the groundspeople have planted annuals and have done that for a number of years now. The choice of plantings, the colors can change from year to year as the staff changes, but they're always maintained impeccably and serve as a wonderful example and maybe a source of ideas for the homeowner who needs, you know, I sure could use some purple over here. And, you know, there might be something that you see in that garden there that, well, you know, it'll do well in pure sunshine because that garden is a sunny, sunny garden.
Yeah.
So, but it, like I said, I'm sure there are, I'm not the only person who remembers it from childhood, but I'm sure there are people who are relatively new to Kenosha who has no idea that garden is there.
That's certainly possible. So. Absolutely. Well, I can't say that I remember it from my childhood, but I have longtime fond memories of that as well. For a number of years, there was an absolutely wonderful event that occurred in the summer, which was called the Festival of Arts and Flowers.
Exactly.
It was organized by Larry Simons, who was the coordinator of fine arts for Kenosha Unified for many years. And my understanding is that this was Larry's idea, and he went to a gentleman named Santo Principe, who was with the city of Kenosha, and together they created this wonderful event, which would feature live musical performance and the gardens right there, and then displays of lovely artwork by Kenosha Unified students, and it would be this whole afternoon on a Saturday, and I was the MC for nearly all of those Festival of Art and Flower presentations. And that was my introduction to the garden there at Lincoln Park. And there could not have been a more beautiful setting for an event like that. So.
It's amazing how a garden like that can be a part of your life in various forms. I, too, was involved with the Festival of Arts and Flowers on the arts end. Mm. When I was substitute teaching, I did a lot of art classes. And for a couple of years, I would have student displays in as a part of that event.
So that's it's a nice opportunity for people to return to the Lincoln Park gardens, and I'm assuming one of the reasons to visit it Saturday is that there will be somebody there who can answer some questions.
Let's hope so. This this is a site that is not going to be manned by members of the Garden Club. We do hope that there will be some, or at least one, someone representing the city who's familiar with the planting and the routine and the life cycle of that garden over the course of the year.
Right. So we hope that people will take advantage of that and everything else that is part of this year's Secret Garden Walk. And as Linda outlined earlier in the interview, the proceeds that come from this, the major fundraiser of the Four Seasons Garden Club, go to support, among other things, scholarships and the maintenance of the Memorial Garden at Kemper Center, for plantings around Arbor Day and Earth Day, the purchase of horticulture matters for the Kenosha Public Library, and so on. Linda, I can give you about a minute or so to talk about one facet of the Secret Garden Walk we haven't yet touched on, namely the raffle and some wonderful prizes.
Well, I'll tell you, I was gone from Kenosha for a number of years, like almost 30. And I learned a lot about this city when I came back. Kenosha loves its raffles. Every church festival, you know, every event, there's going to be a raffle and people enjoy it. So it's something that we added to the tour a number of years ago. They're at each of the private homes on the tour. There will be a planter that is raffled off. The tickets are sold at every one of the homes, $1 each or 6 for $5. And you can fall in love with one particular planter and stuff the ballot box there, or you can sprinkle your tickets throughout the entire walk and take your chances. And aside from our ticket outlets, the vendors who support us in this effort, these planters are all donated by local firms. And they too include Summer's Garden and Anton's, who are also two of our ticket outlets, Sunnyside Florist, but Burr Oaks Garden and Greenhouse is involved in one of our planters, which I've actually already seen, and it's big and it's gorgeous. And Vinnie Chambers is a relatively new donor of a planter, and Vinny is a landscaper and designer who specializes in conifers, and you've heard that term earlier, that Zen garden. Vinny has done a lot of work in that, or contributed planting materials to that garden, and he's doing one of our planters this year as well. So I expect that planter is going to appear to be a mini Zen garden, because that's what Vinny does, and we love his work.
Wow, so fantastic. So again, those beautiful planters will be available and visible at the various private gardens, and you can purchase your raffle tickets and cross your fingers and hope to go home with one of them. And we do want to reinforce the fact that if you want more information, even beyond what has been shared in this conversation, or want to make sure you've got it right, you can go to the website of the Four Seasons Garden Club, which is fourseasonsgardenclub.org, but it's the numeral four, not the word four, but number four, fourseasonsgardenclub.org. And much of this information is available there for you to reference. And the time is gone, but wow, it's been fun once again to talk with you, Linda Guttormson-Guy, past president of the Four Seasons Garden Club and one of the primary coordinators of this year's Secret Garden Walk, which is coming up Saturday, July 12th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., rain or shine. And we certainly hope for shine. Linda, great to have you with us once again, and best wishes to you and everybody else in the Four Seasons Garden Club.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Tomorrow on the morning show, it is the monthly visit of Kaylin Palomares. She will be joining us to talk about some various issues related to the environment. And we have two newly recorded author interviews that will be coming up on Friday's morning show, including one conversation with a journalist for The Hollywood Reporter, talking about his brand new novel called In Pursuit of Beauty. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. Today is going to be a partly to mostly sunny day, and we're headed for a comfortable high of 76 degrees, an overnight low of 63. Tomorrow's high, 78. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha Racine.